The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love till 9 p.m. daily in Sarah's Kitchen.
Welcome one and all to the DL Debate. Thanks so much for tuning in now on Highland Radio or back via the podcast. Well, what a weekend it was, especially if you're from Neve Patrick Muff or you're part of Downing's Ladies Neve Patrick in the Ulster Final and the Downing's Ladies Ulster Champions. Fair play to them. We're going to talk more about that shortly. Coming up on the show this evening, first of all, we have two of the men in the middle, two of our national referees, Enda McFeely and Mark Dorian. No refs, no game. We're going to hear all about the seven new rules coming in fresh from the national refs meeting last Monday in Abbottstown. They'll be discussing the new rules and, of course, their implementation and a huge change in our game coming in 2025. Be great to get their insights. Then I'll be speaking to Cross McGlenn and Armagh legend Aaron Kiernan. We're going to speak about the GAA points of the week, the Ulster club, and of course his new role in the Sligo coaching ticket, Tony McEntee's ticket there. Aaron's joining them. And an under 21 championship here at the weekend in the A grade. Gidoor, now we're at semi final level. Gidoor and Glenn Swilly are meeting each other. Glenn Swilly got the better of their neighbours, Terman. Gidoor beating Arua. That's a repeat of last year's under 21 final. A couple of cracking games in these semis, actually. Neve Connell, who beat Buncrana, will play Four Masters, ever coming Four Masters, who had too much for McCool. So down to the last four teams there, should be great. Them semi finals are next weekend. As I say, Neve Patrick sealed through to the Ulster final. It was a headline in the Donegal News today. I spoke with their manager Daniel McCauley last week, and of course they were getting ready for that huge game against Collegeland of Armagh. A couple of key men injured. Keane McColligan, a C come on sub, and big Kevin Lynch held back. Whether he comes on now in the final remains to be seen, but a huge final coming up against Craig Bann of Derry. Myself and Brendan Kilcoyne will join Oisin, giving commentary and live reaction and action from the game. We have interviews up on HighlandRadio.com of Jonathan Toy and of Daniel McCauley, and Oisin is going to do a big preview on Thursday night of the Ulster final with people from the Neve Patrick Club looking forward and looking ahead to the big game. Now, at the weekend, as I say, Downing's came out on top with a game in Warren Point after extra time, and Barney Kern, who is joint manager with Dominic McGruddy. Barney joins me now to discuss that brilliant, epic victory and look forward to an All-Ireland semi-final. Barney, how are you, lad? Dreamland, Ulster champion, lad. Mighty, mighty stuff. What a story.
Yes, Brendan, how's it going? Listen, it wasn't easy getting over the line, but we happened to get over the line. But no, it was as a man said, a stuff that dreams are made of. You know, to become Ulster champions, it's not something you pencil on the calendar to start a year. But look, as we know, a season seems to go different ways, and lucky enough we're out and we're the champions now, and we're lucky enough, thanks to God.
It's been some run, Bernie. There's not that many Ulster crowns coming to Donegal Club football. And listen, took extra time. Shannon McGrady's brilliant score, 3 minutes, and they added extra time. The crucial point, Bernie, was it defences on top with both teams for most of the game?
Listen, we went 4 or 5 points up, and we were going well, and we kind of let them back into it. We eased off a wee bit, which wasn't in the plan at all, but we let them back into it. But you know yourself, everybody gets a purple patch in a game, and it's a matter of managing it and staying with them. So lucky enough, we did. We went down at half time, a couple of points up, and you know we felt that we were probably the better team. There was a strong breeze there. We felt maybe that it wasn't enough, a couple of points, but it was about work rate. We focused on work rate this last couple of weeks, and that was the word we were using, and it was no different at half time. It was go out at the second half and outwork them, and hopefully still be in it at the end of the game.
Yes, yes. Yourself and Dominic McGruddy will be highly sought after this year now, yeah, Bernie?
We're not panicked yet. We're getting ready for an All-Ireland now at the minute, and All-Ireland semi, and Downing's at home, Brendan, against Kilcock, the Kildare champions, Leinster champions. So we'll try and get this season over first before we make any drastic plans for next year.
Barney, listen, it's phenomenal. I mean, fair play to you, Barney. I know all the work that goes involved there, so fair play to you and the whole Dominic, the backroom team, the girls, the club. It's a massive effort. Bernie, listen, how do you get information on Kilcock? Is there stuff out there? It's suppose, Bernie, it's one thing going on the Ulster trying to assess the counties and the strength in that. Now you're up against a provincial winner. It'll certainly be a tough task, but a game away from the ultimate and everybody's book in All-Ireland final.
It's one game away from All-Ireland final, you know. I was even chatting with the girls after when we were sitting having a bite to eat. It's hard to get your head around, to be honest, Brendan, but we have to get our head around it. I was sitting yesterday and lucky enough, the Leinster final was on, it was streamed, so I've watched them a few times. They're definitely a good team. They're handy at getting the goals. They have some real quality, strong footballers, real good players up front that I don't need much of a chance to put it over the bar. So, listen, it was a wee bit hard getting information in Ulster, but between us all, you might know somebody that you can give a call. You've got wee snippet bits, but this is, we've got a bit of a video to watch now of the opposition, but they were up at our final, so they seen us playing the flesh, so they might have a wee head start on us, but they have to come to Downing, so it'll not be a,
yeah.
It'll just not be a, we'll nip over the road, we'll try and take them down over Loss Salt as well to make it a wee bit more efficient.
Roll out the red carpet. Listen, Barney, it's going to be a great 2 weeks, man. I can only imagine the buzz there because, you know, when you're on uncharted territory, that to keep winning and to win an Ulster Championship and still you've got a huge carrot there dangling. You know, it's a massive, I suppose, time for the club. I mean, hats off to you. It's brilliant stuff, lad. And listen, I hope you have a brilliant couple of weeks and you make the All-Ireland final.
That's the job. And Brendan, thanks a million. I just want to say a big congratulations to the wee under-13s that went to Comba yesterday and won their county title. So the wee club's in a high now from the underage up to senior. So thanks a million for everything.
Not at all, Bernie. I'll be talking to you soon. So sure, listen, best of luck in the semi.
All right, thanks, man. Okay,
cheers,
bye.
Yeah, that's Barney Kern there. Indeed, fair play to him and the Downing's ladies. What a brilliant story. You know, we wish them all the best in their semi-finals, I say. Now we're going to look and talk to some of the best refs in the county, our two national refs, and we're going to go through the rules, the 7 new rules that are potentially going to come in and their implementation. Lads, how are you today?
Oh, good, Brendan.
Lads, thanks.
Good, Brendan. Out in the cold, but good.
Oh, don't tell me that. Hey, the snap's going to get you. Hey, you haven't got the gloves on.
No. That's for the younger boys, the glove.
Hardy man. Lads, listen, there's the seven rules, you know, where a lot of talk about them, speculation, how's it going to work, what's it going to be? And then, of course, you have the officiating of the rules, which is a massive side of it too, lads. And I spoke to you last weekend and you said you were going down for a bit of a meeting down in, was it Abbottstown, you said, just around the whole process of doing that. What was the outcome? And I'll go to you first on that meeting, and what did you take from it in terms of, Are these rules definitely going to be put through? Do you see it, and how was that reflected at the meeting?
Well, first of all, as you said, we went down, all the national referees went down to Abbottstown on Monday night for a meeting with FRT chairman Jim Gavin, just to go over a few rules and a few different interpretations of the rules. The 7 rules that are proposed are put forward now to be seconded on the 30th of November. So we don't actually know what rules are coming in yet. We're thinking the 7 rules are coming in, but we're not 100% sure on it yet. Now, what we took away from the rules was there's still a wee bit of clarity needed. There's still a wee bit of unsurety as in wording of certain rules and stuff like that. You know, it's not clear cut yet. So as referees, we're still learning them at the minute as we go.
Yes. What did you take from that, Mark? Was the feeling there that they would be passed and that the full 7 would come in? Because to me, it's an absolute. I don't want to actually get negative on it because our game needs rule changes, but it seems like a lot. It seems like a hell of a lot. Like, it seems like our game's going to be really completely reformed on the pitch.
As Enda said, there was a positive meeting for the most part, but. Jim Gavin seems to be, there's a big push to get the full 7 passed. I believe the full 7 will probably pass, but as I said, as come through the motions and that, reading them last Monday night, there was a few issues that were brought up, and even still today, an email came out just to highlight any more changes that or issues that we felt needed to be reviewed, which will have to happen after they're passed at Congress. So I do think the 7 will come in, but there'll have to be changes done afterwards as well.
Yeah, very good. Listen, Les, we'll go through them quickly here, and I'd love to get your views on them and what you think about officiating them. There's a couple that aren't really that, you know, they're not going to be, I think, cause that much issue out there. But just one, lads, from the get-go. The 1v1 throw-in end, I will go over and back on these. The 1v1 throw-in, Mark, if you've got something to say on it, jump on, no problem. Why do you think this was needed in terms of, well, this is just because of the bit of struggling before the ball was hopped in, or could be not just to keep the players a few yards apart? What was your feeling on the need for that one to come in?
Personally, well, without saying too much, as I say, the FRC are people held in high regard. So whatever decisions they are making, it's obviously to benefit the game. Now, on a personal level, I think they're trying to say that there was too much kind of holding and barging on throw-up.
Yeah.
Personally, how I deal with that is I always just warn them just beforehand, any holding, anything like that there, there's going to be a free the other way. Yeah. But obviously the FRC seem to read it different. They think there needs to be a better understanding of the throw-up as in regards, and they just want to cut out the holding and the barging and one other stuff like that, Brendan.
And could you just say that, right, players, you have to stand, say, 5 yards apart when the ball's hopped up? Or, you know, is that not something we could have done without putting this one? I'm just thinking into some of these things, and we'll go through them. It seems like you put a lot of good minds together, and there was maybe too much. Do you know what kind of way? It's like a brainstorm, and you're kind of like, I don't think we needed a lot to change things, and I think then we could have assessed it then. But it feels like there's a big bang there. I mean, that's one for me that, as you said, maybe, you know, you could have taken care of. But listen, maybe it is a bit messy at the start of it, but I think if you could have kept them apart, but however, there's one anyway. The advanced mark inside, listen, straightforward enough. Again, inside the 21, I don't see why, if we have the three up, we still need an advanced mark, because you're going to have to kick the ball. You're going to kick the ball now. So I don't see why that advanced mark was needed again. I just think I would have scrapped that. I think it's putting a lot of pressure on defenders as well. The goalkeeper then can't take the I suppose the initial pass, and he can't take a pass while he can take a pass within his own box then, and only in the opposition's inside line. Mark, in the opposition half. What do you think of that one?
I suppose it's to prevent these. The goalkeeper being used as an out for defenders whenever he's back inside his own half. There is one there that if the ball's played in and it accidentally comes off the defender, he can take it then. Right. But I think it's basically to prevent this slow moving back and forth, holding it on across the 45 in his own half. And that's basically, I think a lot of people actually wanted to see that. And after the interprovincials, a lot of people actually wanted to see the just keep the goalkeeper in his own half and in his own square. But I think it's a positive. You see the likes of Niall Morgan, who's excellent, added Rory Began. You know that they're an extra player that teams can use to an advantage.
Yes,
in that sense, you know.
I agree with that. See the small option in it though, that he can receive it in the opposition half. What is that about? Is that about him potentially, if he was up the pitch, he could receive a ball? Am I reading that correct?
Yeah, no, that's essentially the reading of it, is that if he's across the halfway line, he can receive a pass from his own player in the opposition half.
But is that still, I suppose, Mark, that thing of not come back to him defensively, which I agree with, but now we're still encouraging them to become part of the attack. So say the team sets up with the 12 players, 11 players, whatever, as outfield players, defend in that area, the keeper then can still become the plus one. I think that actually, I don't know why that was
the main. Yeah, and that was actually shown in the interprovincials with Niall Morgan. Actually, I think it was Friday night, where the crowd actually started booing when the ball was being passed over and back between Niall and a few of the other players as well. So that's when a lot of people actually started saying, well, should keep him in his own half and keep it that he can only get it when he's in the large rectangle.
Yes, that would be something. Yeah, we'll get it sorted, lads. We'll put this to right. The solo and goal. This is a very interesting one. Now, I think it's a brilliant thing in rugby. I just think, I'm just worrying, wondering, and you know, you're reffing a game now, and you blow for a free, automatically everybody stops, and somebody could hop up, tap and go, that maybe he's on the 1v1, the last man in his way. Like, I think that one, now you might say, right, you have to get used to it, but it's very hard. I'm just thinking, obviously I was a forward player, but I'm just thinking about the defenders here. I mean, that's a very difficult one, because automatically we will all stop, and somebody can tap and they're bang gone. What was it? What was the talk about that in Abbottstown?
Well, I think I agree with you again, Brenton. I think it's an excellent rule. I think there's far too much slowing up of the ball. The tap and go, for instance, as well, just on that, if a player is trying to take a tap and go and he's stopped from doing that, it's going to be moved 50 metres.
Right.
So huge. I think it's going to stop a lot of the negative. Yeah. Slowing down of opposition. I think it's a great idea. And by the way, as well, the stop and go can't be taken inside a 13 meter free or anything like that. The old kind of rules still apply with that.
Right.
You know, it's kind of out the field.
Right.
But as I say, some of them rules, especially that one, will police itself where players won't stop, because they know if they do stop, as you say, there could be a potential goal opportunity in behind them if they do stop.
So, yeah, so I think for a defender, that's very tough, because I think the advantage rule, if played properly, should kind of take care of that, because you have a boy hanging off a boy, but he pushes him away, and you'll often see it, and use two lads do it all the time, you know, let it play. I think that probably should kind of take care of that. I just wonder, you know, if you have a player, he's stopped, he's tackled, right? If he then is scared of that 50-yard rule, and he doesn't know if the guy's going to stop or go or not, like for him then, I suppose, so if your man taps and go, he can tackle him straight away, or what? How does that work then?
When he takes the tap and go, as far as I'm aware, Mark might correct me on this, he's more up to date, more in the rules than I am at times. If he takes the tap and go, he can't be touched for 4 metres, as far as I'm aware.
Right.
Yeah, and so essentially the tap and go has to be taken immediately, and he has... So if the free's given, we'll say, in the halfway line, he can travel 4 metres to take that tap and go, and then he can't be touched for another 4 metres.
Right. So what the defender has to decide to do then, you blow the whistle, he must then completely like start to backtrack to get himself into position 4 metres away to defend, really? That must be what's in his head.
Yeah, well, essentially, yeah.
So can I just cut on that there, Mark? That's pretty much the same as the midfield advantage. Really. Like, if he doesn't take the mark, he can't be touched for 4 steps. Now, that policed itself quite well when people get used to it, so I don't see any reason why this one can't be the same, you know what I mean? People just get back into position a wee bit better, a wee bit quicker, just that's all.
Yeah. I don't know if this image right. So if the defender's tight and he's just fouled him, say the two of them hit the deck, so a guy's just on his way up, your man taps, and he can go, and that defender can't tackle him. He just literally has to sprint kind of back after him until... the 4 metres. I think in certain zones, a bit like that, if there's cover around there, the forward should get the advantage, and I think it could excite the player. But I'm just wondering, that, say that 3v3 scenario where you're maybe 40 metres out and it's a 1v1 and the guy's fouled and he's up, tap, and he's gone. You know what I mean? I can see, you know, because if you often look, if you think about rugby and that, it's very, when that guy taps in rugby, there's often a collection of players still in the round to defend. Whereas if it ends up being a 1v1 somewhere, that guy could ghost and be gone because he can't be tackled. But listen, I suppose it's like anything, lads. We're going to have to see how it plays out. We just, lads, is this, it's not known whether it'll be in club this year. Somebody was telling me it wouldn't be in club, but somebody's saying that's just yet to be decided. Was there any talk of that in Abbottstown?
Sorry, Mark, if you were talking there. As far as I'm aware now, when this is passed on the 30th, it is coming into all football for 2025 on a trial basis for a year. So club football is included in it.
Right.
Is that right, Mark? Yeah?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it's all football, club and county.
Sound good, man. But that's what you get for listening to some man on the street that told me it's not coming on the club. I'll stand corrected on that one, lads, because I was chatting to Greg earlier about that. That's the other one, the 3v3, about players. Is there a penalty for a player that accidentally encroaches or makes a tackle back, or what is the rules? How do you see that 3v3 playing out in terms of the borderline, the halfway line for the six players?
It's going to be an interesting one, Bryn, because the penalty, now, if it's of the players tackling the ball or the balls in and around that, the free kick's on the halfway line. But if the attack is happening, and we'll say he's inside the 40-meter arc or anything they got there, and a player encroaches, the free is actually on the 20-meter line.
Right.
So the opposition's 20-meter line. So whoever commits the infringement of crossing the halfway line, we'll say it be it an attacker, the team that's attacking, and one of their players crosses, that's automatically a free on their 20-meter line back for the team that's defending. Then. So
right.
it's a pretty severe penalty in that sense. But if it, we say he crosses over in possession of the ball, well then that's just a free kick on the halfway line where he crossed
right.
the halfway line in possession of the ball.
Yes, and tell me, is there a wee bit of room in this one for maybe calling it? Like somebody kind of is making a run and they accidentally cross it, or they make a tackle and they fall over it and that. It's not going to be strictly, or is it? Or how do you see that?
Well, the guidelines that we're getting from Croke Park is these rules are going to be implemented on a strict basis. Everybody's
right.
You're going to be forced to implement these on a strict basis, so everybody's in the one wavelength. If you fall across the line, if you step across the line, if your momentum takes you over the line, if you step over the line in a tackle, that's going to be penalised.
Right. Right, that's interesting. And tell me, and just around the three and the three then, so they can't be changed. Can you make a tactical change in the game? And how is that done during the game from player to player? Can that be done, or is it only subs? Or how is the officials alerted to changes in those six?
Well, that is actually one that, as far as I'm aware, didn't come up in the meeting, but I would be assuming if there's going to be a change in tactics where they want to move the centre-half back, move him back maybe to defend, the transition would have to be done probably on the halfway line. I'm
yes.
assuming that's the way it would go. But there has to be three up at all times. So, for instance, if the third defender comes down to change with somebody else, if he crosses the line, he's going to be penalised before that other player crosses back over the line to take his position.
Yes.
Is my understanding of it.
Right.
Yes.
And Mark, so the players, the three and the three, do they not have to be named? Can they be any players? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, they can be any players. So essentially in that circumstance that you're saying, Brendan, is that the fourth player would have to be back across in his own half before
sure.
the other player would cross back over the halfway line. So
yeah.
It doesn't have the three players don't have to be named. It can be any player on the
yeah.
pitch.
Yes. So that the juggling that happens there, Mark, is going to be very interesting because different players are going to be coming in and out. And I would imagine most teams up just to keep some kind of normality and probably kind of keep two the way you would see it maybe inside with, and there'll be two strict defenders probably staying there because I'd imagine it wouldn't suit everybody to kind of guess who's staying up and who's staying back for each play. That could get a bit complicated. I'm trying to figure that out in my head, actually, as we're talking, because you're going to have different players swapping. And, you know, if a team isn't all together in that, they're going to encroach and you're going to have the 13 end up in a half, and then it's going to be a penalty or a free.
Yeah, that's the big, I suppose teams will probably actually catch on to it fairly quick. You know, the managers there are looking at these now, and they've already, you know, they mightn't be training in person, but they've got their coaches there, and I'm fairly sure they'll be up to them as much as we are, if not better than that. But we'll know them.
And do you know what? I just think it'd be an interesting one then. If obviously you have certain players detailed to mark, but if that guy then decides, here, I'm going back in, get you in there, so you have a main forward that drifts back in, but the defender obviously has to stay because he's one of the three. So at that point, either he has to shout one of his guys, here, get you back across the line. I'm going in after this dude again. So there'll be quite a bit of, I would say, cat and mouse going on then. Who's going to cross that line at what time? And that actually be another a huge thing for teams to keep an eye on and try and figure out where they get the best of their players.
Well, the teams are fairly well coached now at this stage. Like, there'll be telltale signs. Like, if your full forward decides that he wants to go back, you know what I mean? He's going to have to let a shout out at him. He's going to have to come from the management. So if that happens, the defending team will catch on to that. Either the player inside marks him, or he picks up the fella that's crossing the halfway line again. You know what I mean? It wouldn't be a massive issue that, if you get me, because anything like that that happens will be happening out around the 45, so it will be no danger, if you know what I mean. The halfway line.
Yeah, yeah. And listen, I was down to the last couple, just kick-out player, on the kick-out, players no longer need to be outside the 20-metre line. The ball must travel outside that new 40-metre arc. Once received, can't be going back to the keeper. Listen, you'll officiate that, handy enough, lads. The new scoring system, lads, obviously, we see the arc there, the 2 points, the 1 point inside, 45 set pieces, 2 points, a goal, 4 points. What are you making of that, lads, in terms of just where the strike happens? Is, you know, I'm just obviously, we use being officials, the nitty gritty of it, about just that arc area. So the shot has to be taken, obviously, outside the arc. Is there any grey area there about a follow through on the ball in that? Is that going to be a slightly difficult one, Mark?
Well, the rule is that it's on or outside. So if your foot is standing on the white line of the 40-metre arc, it's a 2 point score. So if as long as one of your standing foot essentially has to be on or outside the 40-metre arc for it to be a 2 point score. So it does. So that's the ruling on it. And the other one then is that if you commit a foul's committed and the ball's advanced 50 metres from outside the 40 metre arc, that player taking the free has the option to go back outside the 40 metre arc and take a free for a 2 point score as well.
Yes, yes. Which I'm just thinking about big games, lads. Even some vital league games coming down to the wire. I'm just thinking this is such a game changer around a team being a point up. And next thing, bang, they don't even get a draw. It's really going to create some drama, I suppose. Is that what we want from sport? Or do you think all these rules are carry through? What's your feeling on it?
Well, the 2.1 is going to be, it'll work well, maybe up until the last month, as you say. For instance, a few clubs in Donegal, know what I mean? If they're down by a point and somebody gets a 2-pointer, it's going to be a big decision.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But just make sure that when you're making them decisions, you're close to the tunnel. That's all I can say towards the game.
Big decisions is what you two men make, hey, and more power to you. Lads, had a great chat to you last week, actually, and I know we were just going through the rules again. It's always good to talk, and I was saying to the two of you, and you agreed with it. Need to probably talk about more just about rules and about people's attitudes towards coming to games and officiating and how important all that of it is, lads. And should we get a chat about that, maybe coming into next year? It'd be interesting to see what you've made of the opening games of the season and that and how it all was. But for now, Mark Doyne, Enda McFeely, thanks so much for going through those rules with us. And I wish you all the best coming into the new season, lads. Keep up the good work.
Thanks very much, Ben. Just one more thing before you go there. Just on that 4-pointer, I don't know if we covered it. That probably will come back down to 3, just so everybody's aware.
That's your feeling?
Yeah, that goal will come back down to 3.
You think that too, Mark?
It's actually the Football Review Committee have reviewed it, and it is coming back down to 3.
Right, there you go. There you go.
So that'll clarify that.
One wee one chalked off the list, lads. We'll see what else makes it through. But for now, lads, as I say, thanks so much for joining us, lads. And we'll keep in touch. Good luck with the season ahead. Yeah, great chatting, catching up, Enda and Mark there. They've definitely made things a lot clearer in my head with all these new rules going into the new season. Now, after the break, I'm going to be joined by Armagh legend Aaron Kernan.
The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. Serving food you'll love till 9 p.m. daily in Sarah's kitchen. And there's free admission entertainment every weekend.
Yes, folks, welcome back to this evening's show. I'm now joined by the AK, Aaron Kiernan, the Great Cross and Armagh legend that he is. How are you, Aaron?
Oh, it's good to be. Always good to be in your company, my man.
Hey, listen, great to talk as ever. And tell me, the word is on the street, a new role at Sligo. I tell you what, lad, it was only a matter of time before somebody picked you up somewhere and you're going down to be one of the homeboys there to boost the fortunes of the Sligo men.
Yeah, I think there's a few of your Donegal boys have already been in there ahead of me. So hopefully the experience was good for them. Colin was there for a few years with Tony and then obviously Paul Durkin. To be honest with you, again, it wasn't really something that I'd put a whole pile of thought into just initially. I was glad whenever I quit last year that I got into under-aid coaching. It was just literally under 10 within the club, but enjoyed it because obviously kids are playing, so if you're going to watch them training anyway, so you might as well help out. But to be fair, I just felt it was too good of an opportunity not to take up with. Obviously, from a lot of our conversations that we would have had on your own show or with the smaller fish, you'd have a fair idea of how a sort of whole Tony McEntee as a person, as a coach, how he likes the game played tactically. So, yeah, for him to come and ask you to get on board to help out in any small way, I just felt it was too good of an opportunity for me in terms of maybe more so what I could learn and how I could develop in terms of getting into the management game. And then if I can add a wee bit back, well then, great. It'll be a win-win for everybody.
I'd imagine so, Aaron. Listen, I know you'll be a great addition down there. And the more me and you had a talk, you know, about even for me going into the senior club, it was such an eye-opener because I had been watching games to a certain level and would have thought I had a good handle on it, but it so sharpened up my brain around where everybody is, you know, whether it be defence, attack, midfield, what's happening on the pitch. You know, you're really looking beyond the play. And I think I was always trying to do that, but I think from being invested as it is now and really watching other teams critically, it really does open up your mind to what's happening there, because it had been 12 years since I had coached a team last, so this was a major learning curve for me. And I think you going into the county setup, you know, it'll be fascinating to see, and I know you'll love it.
And it is, you're spot on. It's on every front. Like, I'm conscious again that right, well, I've only stopped playing club football, but I've stopped playing county football 10 years ago. The world moves on. You know, what's been done at county training now in terms of analysis, their preparation, tactically how they're set up, your finger isn't in the pulse. So even from a media perspective in terms of what you're saying, I think definitely it's something that will help. And I suppose a bit of everything, like I said, it was definitely working with Tony in terms of just the experience that he would have gained since, like, Tony went from being a club footballer, quitting in 2009 to managing us in 2010, and the rest, as I say, is history. The best team, the best environment, the best fun I ever had in sport was under his watch. So that's why I wanted to get in. But then particularly with the new rules as well, even if it is something that I want to get into club coaching, like yourself, in a couple of years' time, you're getting a year's head start here as well, because obviously the new rules are coming in. We expect them to come in the new year, and that'll be a year ahead of what happens in club football. And then just small things you said, Brendan, how you liaise with your S&C, with your nutrition, how you're liaising with your other coaches in terms of how you develop your, not only your a session for that night, but how you develop the season. You know, like, at what stages are we cranking things up? At what stage are we working on fitness and strength? Then what's our skill development? When does our tactics come in? All of that sort of stuff, and how you plan that, because players absolutely, never mind at county level, players expect that now at club level. And if you don't have it, they'll not be too long rounding on you. So how that all works, how it's put in place, is something that I'm really looking forward to getting involved and getting a greater insight into it. And then, like I said, whenever it is my time to add something to the role, whatever I've been asked to do, well, then hopefully I'm capable of doing that also.
Yeah, and no doubt you will, sir, 100%. Aaron, listen, you touched on the rules here. I'm going to ask you a few questions on them in a minute. Just a quick look across them. I had two of our top refs on earlier in the show talking about it. Very interesting stuff from their perspective after the national meeting in Abbottstown last week. But Aaron, Ulster Club, something that you know very well and your team dominated for so long. Tell me, are we at the real Ulster Club now after a couple of hammerings? I know our game was tight with Argyll, but you know, Argyll hammered Carrigan. Obviously, Scotstown had way too much for Beleek. We've got a couple of absolutely fascinating semi-finals coming down with Kilcoo, Scotstown, Argyll, Kieran, and Clanairn from your own county of Armagh. They should be two crackers.
Yeah, as you know well, this time of year, I loved it. Absolutely loved it as a player. Just special times. You're heading in buses and you're traipsing all over the province to play against the best players in front of good crowds, under lights. Just really stuff that would get any player going. So I'm definitely, I think we're in for a couple of cracking encounters this weekend. I'm actually going to go along to the Kilcoo and Scotstown game. Obviously, Kilcoo, they've gone on and they've won Ulster, they've won that All-Ireland, something that has eluded the Scotstown team. You know, they've been there, lost an extra time to ourselves in 2015. They've ended up, they lost after extra time to, obviously, Gweedore. And then, obviously, last year again against Waddy Graham. So, they're unbelievably experienced. And just over that 10 years, they have just drip fed in a few new younger players that won the minor championship again. So, and they're a club with rich pedigree in this competition. So I fancied Kilkoo to beat them last year. Kilkoo were going really well. And then just that one mistake by Ryan McAvoy at the end, which was very uncharacteristic for him, Scotstown punished. So this weekend, the bit I've seen at Kilkoo, I don't see them going as well as what I felt they were going last year. And does the Scotstown, in my opinion, were underdogs going into that game last year. But does the confidence from that win, does that stand to them this weekend? You know yourself, see, whenever you're going into Ulster all the time and you're used to this situation, this scenario, they're two really experienced teams. But I think Scotstown could take more belief out of doing what they did last year, going to Newry, beating Kilkoo, that could put them as just maybe slight favourites, in my opinion, going into this weekend.
Yeah, certainly. And listen, Clan Aaron, we're all looking. I always find it fascinating, Aaron, when teams come in, you know, with no history in the competition, no recent history anyway, and, you know, they get across a few games. It must be an unbelievably exciting time for the club after the season that they had so far, that they're a game away from an Ulster final.
Yeah, I'd say it's not even an unbelievable exciting time just this season. It probably has been for a number of years. To be fair to Clan Aaron, this is something that they set about doing maybe 15, 20 years ago. They had this plan in place where they needed to develop what they were doing at underage to try and bring through a flux of young players. It took time. They beat ourselves in a county final, I think it was in 21. I don't know whether they took a bit of the edge off them or something. They didn't respond very well the following year. They didn't go that well last year. Then they were red hot favourites coming into a semi final against Clannagh and got pipped after extra time and that. But this year again, they've won the league last year, they won the league this year, and they beat ourselves in the county semi final. Now, hand on heart, we weren't going well this year. We had obviously distractions off field, which maybe was happening with a lot of the boys' best friend and Caelan Finnegan and a few injuries and that. But Clan Aaron have been the best team in Armagh all season. They're the most consistent team. The only downside, I think it's a great opportunity for them this weekend, and I thought as soon as they won, hand in heart, and if I'm being brutally honest here, I'm disappointed that their county players all went on their team holiday, because if the shoe was on the other foot and Armagh was playing in an Ulster semi-final and Armagh was in an All-Ireland semi-final, would they go on holidays the week of that game? I don't need to tell you what the answer is. So if I'm in Errigal's shoes now this weekend, I'm going straight after them boys. That's what I'm there. But there's both days on them, because obviously they're all Ireland winners. You have All Stars and McCambridge and Turbot. But I just a bit disappointed, because how do you coach them last weekend? How do you do all your tactical work? How do you do your video analysis whenever the five best players that you have aren't there? Now, hopefully, and I'm sure they are doing a bit of training and all that there, but I think it was a great opportunity for them. I'd say Argyll were probably still a slight favourites anyway, but I thought it was a great opportunity that, no, hindsight analysis tell me I'm different, but they may have just hindered themselves in terms of how they have properly prepared for coming in this weekend, because you said it. Now, this is the business end of the Ulster Club campaign. You can't be missing sessions. You can't be missing your analysis. You can't be missing your recovery, all of that sort of stuff. I don't know how you'd be pulling it together this week. How do you train? How do you train Tuesday night whenever your five best players aren't there? How do you do your in-house game? So from an Armagh point of view, I hope I'm wrong, but I think they may just have hindered themselves in terms of showing the best of themselves this weekend.
Yeah. Where was the team all day, Aaron?
They're in Miami at the minute. They're in America at the moment.
I get you. And I just think from you guys, obviously the way you did it at Cross, there wouldn't even have been a question. And probably that was part of your success. But, you know, trying to think, I suppose their girlfriends, maybe your wives or whatever, pulling on them partners saying, here, trip to Miami. I've been trying to juggle that as well, because we've had players, we had a training camp pre-championship there, and, you know, our county boys in, we're in holidays. So that was one of the big reasons we wanted everybody together. And then they went on holidays. And then you were like, well, what can you do about that? You know, they're training since whenever time when they were.
That's 100%. But how are you going to make this next jump, this next step? And I appreciate that they sacrifice and that the partner sacrifice and all of that. I'm only telling you myself, I wouldn't have won anything if I didn't. I never went on a summer holiday in my life. You know, I never went to America. I didn't do all them things, but I wouldn't change it for the world, because if you want to get to the top, there's just some stuff you need to forgo. And to me, I would want to win that Ulster club more. You can go on holidays for the rest of your life, but you only get so many opportunities to win this Ulster. And like I said, they've been building this past few years. They've definitely been the most consistent team within Armagh. They won the league last year. They won it again this year. Rightfully county champions again. I thought it was, whenever I first seen the draw, I was like, them and Argyll, going to be a brilliant game. Really looking forward to that one. And then you're like, does this put a bit of a spanner in the works for them? Like I said, time could tell. They might come home as refreshed as anything and a bit of sun in the back. But to me, it's just, if you're trying to coach and manage all of that within Clannairn, it would just be very difficult to keep the focus right whenever those boys are there. Because not only it's the quality, but it's just the presence of them. It's knowing that they're
I was there. I totally get you. You're trying to not, like, guys are trying to love and you're trying to marry that big county. It's a real problem at the minute, I think, Aaron, trying to get all those things together. But listen, not one will solve now. I'm sure the travel agents beside you must be doing well now. You're a backlog of holidays. Aaron, listen, we're actually out of time. We'll park down rules. Me and you using a webinar with Tony Scullion coming up soon now. Whatever happens there, you'll probably do most of the talking. Hey, I'll sit and listen. But for now, Aaron, listen, thanks so much for joining us this evening on the DL Debate, my man. I'll catch up with you soon.
Cheers, Brandon.
Top man. Aaron Kiernan there joining us, and to thank him for his input. Kenneth Wilson for producing the show this evening. All my guests that contributed. Stay tuned next week. We have Tomás O'Shea on the show and we're going to line up a few other guests. The excellent Monday night sessions, a special Monday night sessions is coming your way shortly.
The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. Serving food you'll love till 9 p.m. daily in Sarah's Kitchen.